Hi, and welcome to Revision Media, here with me, Paul Stevenson, live with you through for the next hour from London in England. That's 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. here where I am, and 5 p.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Welcome, everyone, and I hope I find you well wherever you are around the world. Obviously, the beauty of internet radio, you can tune in anywhere from around the globe. So thank you for joining me here tonight. If you do want to call in, if you have any questions, any comments you want to make, the number is 855-492-6049. That's 855-492-6049. If you're calling in from the UK or outside of the United States, I think certainly from the UK, it's just 001 and then 855-492-6049. Any other announcements? Yeah, I want to say that on the other show that I co-host with Richard Carey on Republic Broadcasting Network, next Monday, that will be Monday the 14th of September at 12 p.m. Central, I believe that is, and 6 p.m. UK time, we'll be joined by Mark Collett of Patriotic Alternative. So do join in for that. I'm really looking forward to interviewing Mark myself. I've kept tabs on his content, I would say, for the last sort of 3 or 4 years. He used to be part of the altright.com, if I'm correct, and then he changed his name, changed the name of his organization to Patriotic Alternative, and they are they're a nationalist group. They are what I would call, probably the only real nationalist kind of organization in the UK who speak any sense. And we are going to be doing a discussion on the whole issue of civic nationalism. So yeah, that's Monday the 14th at 6 p.m. on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm actually going to be on there after this show as well, so tune in for that. I'll be live with Richard Carey on Republic Broadcasting Network after the show. That's 11 through till 1 p.m. in the UK. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., I believe, Central Time. Central's slightly different from Eastern Standard. So, all right. Well, I think the two, among a lot of stories, the two big ones, I think we've had, imagine my surprise, that a government that has been eradicating civil liberties since this coronavirus seems to be unprepared to give up its power trip, and is using the excuse of increased cases for more restrictions here in England. And these restrictions are right across the UK. Each of the different nations in the UK have got different nuances of these things, but the basic rules have changed now, where this, in quotes, rule of six is to apply in England from Monday. Witty warns of rapid case rise. This is Witty is the chief medical officer. They got rid of the previous chief medical officer. What was her name? God, her name's escaping me now. That's annoying. Jenny Harries. I wonder what happened with Jenny Harries, because Jenny Harries has, as recently as the beginning of September, I think, or the end of August, has stated that there is no evidence either way, no conclusive evidence either way, that masks are a deterrent and prevent the spread of the coronavirus. And now, this was the previous, as I say, the deputy chief medical officer, who was ruled out. I'd never seen this woman, but she was ruled out at the beginning of all this, when the technocracy kicked into gear and we all had to bow to the scientific dictatorship, the pseudo-scientific dictatorship, guesswork at best, masquerading as science, which has obviously dramatically altered life as we know it here in the West, and has been a global phenomenon with this coronavirus nonsense. So we're not talking about an increase in spike in deaths here. We're talking about an increase in cases. they're actually obviously testing more now. So one would expect there to be more cases. And it seems to me that these increase in cases, which are not even that large compared to, you know, the numbers they're talking about. I think these numbers, you know, are generally across England. These numbers are cases of people with coronavirus. There's no indication any of these people are ill or been hospitalized, and certainly they're not deaths. If there were anybody who was actually ill, you can be guaranteed that we would probably have intimate footage of the two or three individuals who were struggling to breathe in hospital. You know, they would amplify it and exaggerate it so much. So unfortunately, they haven't got that footage in the absence of actual people who are actually ill, and certainly there's no deaths. Well, there has been a few deaths, I think, but they're very, very small. And again, they're in old people. But these new cases have been, the large majority of them have been among young people, I think, between the ages of 18 and 25. And this is no doubt as a result of, you know, the lockdown measures have been eased and young people want to go out and what young people want to do, which is what young people should be free to do, which is go out and socialize with their friends. Human beings are social creatures. And people are getting fed up with it. You know, I was talking to a lady today who I know, and, you know, this woman's on edge a little bit. And, you know, I felt for her. But, you know, she sees that, you know, that this ludicrous focus on the coronavirus and that the deaths are, you know, non-existent now, really. And that these cases, you know, are really small in the big scheme of things. And, you know, she's mentioning things like, you know, what about the economy? What about, you know, people's mental health? You know, people don't talk a lot about the fact that, you know, there's a spike in suicides and mental health problems and domestic violence and drug abuse and alcohol abuse since all this coronavirus thing happened. And these things are a problem in a country in a basically Western culture where you have a moral degeneracy phenomena which is occurring across the Western nations, particularly in recent decades and exponentially so. The, you know, those who, you know, support these types of climates, let's say, for such things, the lawless ones, they call this progress. I think when you look at the Western nations over the last 50 years, particularly, what has occurred could hardly be described as progress by any honest, sane observer. But unfortunately, we have a large swathes of our own population who are totally indoctrinated. The more educated they are, the more they spend time in the indoctrination laboratories, previously known as universities, the more dumb and the more brainwashed they become. So it's hardly progress. So we've had a spike in just a continuation and an acceleration of things like suicide, alcohol problems, drug problems. And, you know, this woman is right to be concerned because there is a tremendous amount of economic ignorance in this country, as it is in most of the Western nations. And because of the stimulus packages, people think that the government are able to, you know, bail people out and print up all, or just, you know, provide money. And if they can do it over, you know, while there's a crisis, surely they can do it all the time. This is the type of thinking that the Bernie Sanders and the Democrats follow. And this is what, you know, the Democrats will bring in properly. The election, in my opinion, is basically going to be, you know, a battle between, you know, socialists and socialists. And, you know, in that kind of battle, I think there's only one winner, the socialists. And what I mean by that is, you know, I still think the Democrats are, in my opinion, you know, well-placed to win that election, because they will do socialism properly. And maybe it's a good thing if they do, so we can get the collapse going properly, and then we might recover from it eventually, maybe in our lifetimes. Because Trump and the Republicans are basically rhinos. And while Trump has done some good things, and he's obviously better than Biden in many ways, and there's something reassuring and likable about Trump, isn't there? He has a certain charisma, and he's very blunt. And, you know, he feels like one of us, doesn't he, in many ways, Trump? But that's in many ways, because Trump is Mr. Hyperbole rather than Mr. Substance. I mean, Donald is great at everything. I mean, is there anything that Donald's not the best at?
Donald Trump, I am the greatest environment president there's ever been. I am the greatest anti-war president there's ever been. I am the greatest economist. This is the greatest economy there's ever been. The greatest economy? Give me a break, Donald. What has this guy done? This guy has just inflated the bubble that started years ago and was expanded under Obama, and he's just kept expanding. I mean, this guy, you know, has got the Fed all over him. He loves the Fed. He loves low interest rates. He loves printing up the money. He loves, you know, the stock market is just a complete and utter hyper bubble. I mean, there was a massive correction early this week with the tech stocks. There was some reality there, and the crash hasn't really happened yet. But anyway, this whole thing with the election, this whole money printing thing, people have no idea. So this has created a false sense of security. The government's coming in, printing money, giving money to everyone, same in the US as it is here and right across a lot of the Western nations. And people think that that's okay, that that can continue. Well, wait till the furloughs stop, wait till the unemployment kicks in, wait till the evictions kick in, wait till it all rolls out, wait till the dominoes really start falling, wait till the housing crash, wait for it all, because it's coming. I heard someone use the analogy, it was Peter Hitchens, one of the few voices of reason over here, a journalist, and a very good journalist, and I have very little that I disagree with the man on. He likened it to, you know, the Niagara Falls. You know, if you're a couple of miles in a nice serene, if you're on a boat and you're coming down that river, it all seems pretty serene. But there's this noise in the background, in the distance, and you're not sure what it is. And the closer you get, the louder it comes. And then just boom, before you know it, you're hitting the Niagara Falls and over you go. And there's no recovering from that. And you know, use whatever analogy you can use. I mean, I like the analogy of the bursting dams. You know, dams have cracks in them, and then there's little trickles, and then there's like a more, you know, steady flow, and then there's another little crack, and the cracks add up until the structure cannot withhold anymore, and then eventually you have a moment, and it's just like silence and pause, and then boom. And that's what's coming. One of these days, we're going to wake up and the stock market's going to just completely have tanked 1929 style. Worse, because the stock market is a bigger bubble than it's ever been. So there's been all this confidence. And, you know, people are right. You know, there are some people out there who do recognize it. And, you know, as I say, I was talking to a lady today. She's worried about this stuff. She recognizes the economy is a big problem. She recognizes that, you know, there's mental health problems and people are still focused on it. As I said, it's like focusing on a bee sting and obsessing about a bee sting all the while you've got a brain hemorrhage or you're having a stroke or a heart attack. You know, I mean, it's absolutely, there's a fog of insanity over the country. They obsess about a crisis, which is nothing even remotely near a crisis. And then they completely ignore the real crisis, which is economic, and the social fallout that will result from that and contribute to that as well. Now, things are already bad enough in the West with things like Black Lives Matter and the woke movement and the cultural Marxist movement and the hatred of white people and the hatred of our culture and basically the manifestation of the critical theory. And actually, Trump pushed back on that earlier this week. No doubt he's pushing back on it because he's looking for some votes, as is his announcement that he's pulling troops out of Iraq and Iran. Trump knows he needs to, you know, bring out the heavy guns. Now, his declaration that he will be, you know, clamping down on this critical race theory. This critical race theory is the name given to this wrecking ball and hate manifestation of utter hatred of everything that we stand for in the West here, our traditions, our culture, our history, our ethnicity here in the West. I mean, it's basically a crime now to say, you know, it's no one dares do it anymore. When I'm talking to Mark Collett on Monday, he'll be a guy which will state the obvious. He's not going to be brainwashed by the Orwellian psychology at work.
that the Western nations are countries which are white nations. It's not controversial to say that Africa, that you know, is made up of black people, or that China is made up of Chinese people. It has become controversial and racist to say that England is a white country, or that America was set up by white people. It was set up by white Europeans. People from the British Isles and the Germanic people of Europe created the United States of America. These things are, as I say, deemed to be racist now. But this critical race theory, Trump, because this has been, he's basically stated he's going to be, you know, attacking this because it's right throughout the institutions of America, including the FBI, like training programs and things like that. You know, just more indoctrination. As I say, this has its roots in the Frankfurt School and things like that. People like, you know, Theodore Adorno and Lowenthal and guys like that, and Eric Fromm, and this was basically just, you know, critical theories basically just criticize everything that's already established to the point that you tear it down. So it's refreshing, it's good news that Trump is pushing back on that. We'll see what comes to it, if anything comes to it, but there's an election coming up in less than 2 months, so he has to bring out the big guns. Now, over here, as I say, we've had this rule of six, which is basically now they've brought in these new restrictions where if you're going out, you can only have six, you can only go out in groups of six or less. But this gets very complicated because it's all about, you know, households. So it's from one household, six people can go out. You know, personally speaking, none of this stuff really affects me, you know. Being somewhat of, I don't know whether eccentric is too strong a word. I wouldn't describe myself as eccentric, but to be somewhat of maybe a little bit of an outsider from, you know, societal norms, I don't have a lot of friends. I've never had a lot of friends. I've always had a handful of people who I count as really good friends. But I'm the kind of person that very rarely goes out in a group of six or more. I mean, occasionally, you know, I suppose if it was a church gathering, we were going for a meal somewhere, that would be one of them, but that's very rare. So it doesn't really affect me. But, you know, the rule of six is brought in to apply in England from Monday. But the point is, this is really the government continuing their draconian measures, continuing to exercise power, which I think is even, you know, legally questionable. There's supposed to be a parliamentary democracy system in this country. These are edicts. And I think that, you know, this is taking the piss, as we say over here, and people are starting to get fed up of it. And there's going to be some pushback now. I think you're starting to see more and more people, you know, right across the political spectrum, left and right. As usual, it's always the more sort of right, in quotes, right-wing people who've got the sense and the testicular fortitude and the discernment to push back on this stuff and catch it earlier. And obviously shows like this and RBN and other, you know, good YouTube content, etc., have been calling this out from the start, that this is a hoax, that this is over-exaggerated, there's no justification for what they're doing. But the government, though, you know, there's an old saying, once there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. Now, there are no deaths anymore. And some people felt that they could overlook it, or they went right along with the government when you had, you know, deaths of people. The majority of these people, again, were very old, maybe people, and people suffer from pre-existing conditions, obesity, you know, even like things like particularly respiratory problems, diabetes, you know, other pre-existing conditions, which is the type of, you know, demographic which flu will kill every year. You know, if you're 25 stone and you can't, you know, you need a crane to get you out of bed in the morning, the flu is going to have a field day with you. You know, you're not long for this world as soon as that virus comes, because you're already struggling. And so these are the deaths. But we don't even have the deaths now. We just have cases.
And the cases are, you know, the numbers are pathetic. So the government is just, you know, it's just it's just exercising its power, because that's what governments do, given half a chance. And they are, you know, as I say, taking the piss, to put it mildly. And I think they're going to get some pushback on this soon, because more and more people, it's so disruptive. And more people are thinking, we've had enough of this. And that's what needs to happen, because this is audacity at pathological levels. I have not worn a mask once when I have went to any of the superstores, and nothing has happened. Now, imagine if instead of 5% of people doing that, if it was 95% of people doing that, what could they do? They can't even arrest me. They haven't got the police immediately, straight away came out and said that they won't police us. They haven't got the numbers. It takes them about half an hour to turn up to a burglary. You think that these people have got the manpower? Now, if they're around and they've got an opportunity to harass someone, they will. We've already seen that. But they haven't got the numbers. Nothing happens. People just need to stop being so supine and so submissive, including in the church. It's a tremendous frustration of mine. And stop putting up with it. They've already said from the start that they haven't got the numbers to arrest even the odd, you know, person like myself or some of you listening who haven't worn masks. So how the hell are they supposed to like clamp down on it if you had 95 or even 70% or even 60% of the population who just ignored them and they just got on with their lives? But it is hard to gauge. On one sense, you get the sense that people are getting more sick of it. And in another sense, it's like there still is this fog of insanity. I heard a guy call into a radio show yesterday, and this guy reckoned, and you know, that, oh, yes, absolutely, we need to clamp down on this more, you know. Oh, I think we should have full lockdown until April. And that we should bring in the military to police it. This is a citizen. And there was a poll done, and I think it was in this, you know, high 60s, where people said they agreed with the new measures being brought in. So this is concerning. So it's difficult to really gauge. You're getting two sort of senses where people are getting fed up with it, and yet you're getting there's another sense where people are, you know, still focusing ludicrously on this hype job known as COVID-19. Now, here you will see in this article, the rule of six and COVID marshals, they're calling them, to be brought in. COVID marshals? Sounds a little bit police state. If that sounds like a little bit like police state, a little bit Soviet Union, it's because it is. COVID marshals. No doubt a lot of them will be Eastern European. I mean, there's a lot of Eastern European people come over here and they end up in these kind of security jobs, you know. They've come from these communist shitholes that are trying to gain ground here in the West now, and are gaining ground. And they, you know, they get these security jobs at big supermarkets and big stores, and they like to throw their weight around. And the type of people that are attracted to these sort of COVID martial jobs, you know, backed by the government, like to throw their weight around. You know, they're power hungry maniacs. So we've got COVID marshals now, which are going to be, you know, clamping down and policing the social distancing and the, you know, the rule of six. This, there needs to be a proper uprising in this country. People need to start en masse pushing back on this, or it's not going to end well. You know, I mean, if the government came out and said, okay, we've discovered the coronavirus is only, you know, contagious and only potentially deadly at, you know, a meter high or more, and therefore, in the name of safety and caring about our fellow citizens, the safest way to avoid the coronavirus and its spread is that we all crawl. That we all go about our business on all fours, and we'll be selling knee pads and elbow pads for anybody who needs it. And so we have to stay under a meter to avoid the virus. How many people would do it? It wouldn't surprise me if the people came out with the same logic and said, "Well, if we have to do it, you know, if we have to do it, you know, these are difficult times. We have to do it. It's a virus. We're at war here. War. When there was a war." the government didn't bail out everybody. They raised the taxes and the people made real sacrifice. They didn't sit at home and watch Netflix. And that's part of the problem too. And the and these public sector jobs that we pay for, the taxpayer pays for, these clowns, they love the lockdown because they get paid without having to go to work. And there's a lot of people on furlough and these big tech jobs, IT guys and all the rest of it, and others who live out in the suburbs. They've got decent lives. They've got big salaries. They like the lockdown as well because they get it. They get to work from home because they don't want to commute. They're saving money. So there is this bribe factor going on, and there is this bribe factor which has been going on from the start. Now, okay, you get 90% of the money there in the US is going into the stock market to prop it up, and then Donald Trump can say it's the greatest stock market in the history of the world, and if there's any other worlds out there in the universe, it still is the greatest economy that ever existed for any world that I don't even know about. I mean, I like Donald in many ways, but the guy is just hyperbole. It's just, I mean, you know, there's as much hot air in Donald Trump as there is in this bubble. It's everything bubble. And, you know, these big tech guys, 90% of this money has been going into the stock market, probably 95% of it. And the rest of it has been going to pay people more money to sit at home than they would do getting paid. Are you supposed to get people back to work after that? People get used to that. How many people are going to say, oh, yeah, we're really scared of coronavirus, when really it's just BS that they don't want to go back to work. They don't want to go back earning $350. Would you? I mean, it's not been my situation, but I'll tell you what, if I was in some crappy job that I hated and I'm earning $350 a week, and then all of a sudden I'm getting $600 a week from the government, it's a no-brainer. I mean, this is the biggest threat to Trump, because the Democrats will just, as I said, do socialism and money printing, you know, without any inhibitions. And people, you know, it's like a drug. You give someone, you know, you give someone like, you know, 5 grams of cocaine every day, and then you say, well, I'm only going to, you know, you know, I'm only going to give you 2 now every day, or I'm maybe, you know, I'm only going to give you 1, or maybe not give you any at all after a while. You're addicted. You know, you're not caring about the future of your country, or the future of your children, or the economy, or what's coming. You know, all you're thinking about is the immediate future. Just give me the cocaine. I'll worry about all that other stuff later. And that's what's happening. So how many of these people are actually saying that they don't want the, you know, that they're worried about the coronavirus, and how many of them are just invested? I mean, there's also been a lot of corruption over here in the furlough scheme. Something like, I think, was it like 6, I don't know, it was billions anyway. I think it was a couple of billion maybe of, like, you know, fraudulent furlough payments. It'll be the same with the self-employed grants and stuff. I mean, I think maybe people are allowed to work even with those grants. But the furlough thing, there's people been caught working, you know, while, you know, people have been on, you know, on the payroll as well as getting the furloughs and stuff like that. And this is a bribe. It's lobbying by the central banks. You know, they're buying their votes at the next election. So, you know, that's what socialism is, really. It's just, you know, it's, you promise to take money from one group of people and give it to someone else, and people will vote for that so they can get free stuff. That's what the Democrats are all about. And, you know, the rhinos aren't far behind them, really, you know. Anyway, so we've got these new laws over here, and this is all about control and power, and about a government which is addicted to that control and power. And now they haven't got any deaths, and these cases are pathetic, and yet they're still bringing in these measures because that's what governments like to do, given the chance. And so this new rule of 6 is coming in with all the inconveniences that come with it. As I say, it won't affect me. I don't go out in groups of 6 anyway. I go out in groups of 3. I'll go out with my son and his mother, and I'll go out with my friend, or my girlfriend, whatever we are, Rebecca, and her dog, and that's it. I don't go out in groups of six. It's too many people to talk to at the same time. But for people who are more, you know, social in their behaviors, this is a huge inconvenience. And some people get really upset about the, you know, they like to go out in big groups and stuff. And, you know, this, the government is just, it's to say it's overstepping its legitimate sphere of authority is an understatement. And I think there is going to be some legal challenges to this coming down the tracks, because these are edicts. Let me play a clip quickly of a guy over here who will break it down a little bit. Paul Weston is his name. I might try and get Paul on the show. He sort of comes and goes. He does a video every now and again on YouTube. But he's a good guy. He does some good content. He was arrested in wherever his hometown is. I think it's Oxford or something, about 3 years ago. He was talking about Islam, and he was arrested. So, you know, he's got some skin in the game. And so he's talking here about... Just these figures. I mean, not, you know, as I say, most of the cases, what are there? 2,695 cases or something. So, you know, I knew on Monday that they were gearing up, because it's like, it's so obvious, isn't it? Oh, we're concerned now. If this continues, then we're going to have to really look at this. You know, they bring on some scientific expert, you know what I mean? His mouth in his pocket and his mouth full of, you know, bribes. And you can tell, and I actually still think they're building up to a more severe lockdown. And I think that will be their final overstepping the mark, a second lockdown. But I always said I thought we'd be back in a full national lockdown by September. Still plenty of time for that to happen. And so far, this is a step in that direction. I wish I had the time to go into it in more detail, but, you know, these guys are hell-bent on this going through. You can see them really sort of hamming it up and exaggerating it. Earlier, journalists were given some government data that helps to explain why these new restrictions are being introduced now. This is from The Guardian. Coronavirus cases in the UK have gone up significantly. Over the past week, they have risen from 12.5 cases per 100,000 to around 19.7 cases. Oh, that's terrifying. Any symptoms? Any hospitalizations? I don't think so. But amongst the young, the increase is much higher. And that is not just because more people, this article says, this is The Guardian, of course, so you can, you know, it's like their actual commentary on this. You can, you know, confidently dismiss as utter bullshit. And that is not just because people are getting tested. The percentage positive rate has gone up too. I don't understand what that means. I mean, when they say cases, I presume it's a case, you know, it's a positive case of coronavirus. But then they've got this other term, which is, yeah, this, the percentage positive rate has gone up too. Okay, so and they reckon it's not just because people are getting tested. The percentage positive rate has gone up too. Again, I must admit, I'm not really fully clear what that's actually saying. Maybe it's just not saying anything. Maybe it's just, again, it's just nonsense. And, you know, smoke and mirrors language. Amongst 17 and 18-year-olds, there are now around 48.1 cases per 100,000. I mean, this is with children, kids, basically. I think you could count in one hand the amount of people have died or even have had serious symptoms from the coronavirus under the age of 45. And amongst 20 to 29-year-olds, there are now around 41.6 cases per 100,000, and the percentage positive rate is 3.7%. Yeah, I think this percentage positive rate, it's something different from, maybe I'm just being stupid here and this is really obvious to you as listeners, but I'm missing something. But, you know, 41.6 cases per 100,000, I don't think that works out at 3.7%. So this percentage positive rate, anyway, official says the impact of this in hospital numbers will initially be relatively modest. Not to mention the impact on the NHS was, you know, the coronavirus was relatively modest anyway, because most people just stayed away because they didn't want to burden the NHS and they didn't want to catch the virus. Meanwhile, we're going to have a lot of people where it's going to eventually, you know, materialize, and it's already materializing, the people who didn't have life-saving cancer scans and operations and all sorts of stuff, and, you know, that weren't considered important enough because, you know, the coronavirus had a monopoly on human suffering and illness in this country this year, like it has in most places. So it'll be initially relatively modest, the impact in hospitals, because young people tend not to be affected too badly. Tend not to be. None of them are affected in any way. Most of them don't even have symptoms. But they say that in other countries, if case numbers increase amongst the young, this eventually moves up the age bands, affecting people who are much more at risk. I mean, this is the type of stuff that we're dealing with now. You know, so it's not about yourself. You see, and the whole psyops going on here, and Johnson said it somewhere. It's probably in this article somewhere. That the whole idea, well, this is not about, you know, just protecting yourself. We want people to wear masks, and we want people to do this, and we want people to do that, so that they can protect others. So you're not just responsible for yourself. Now you're responsible for your whole society that you've never met. This is complete collectivism. This is sort of complete out of China communist mentality. And it basically causes massive tension within the society and the populace themselves, because anybody now who's not wearing these masks or not adhering to these rules, and of course we've got COVID marshals coming in now, who probably talk like that. You must keep 6 meter apart, or I take you to prison. You know, because you are going to, you know, it's the same old thing. You know, you're guilty because you're not caring about others enough, and this is very powerful, and it's very powerful for people who are, you know. Or not only not, you know, for people who are not understanding what's going on and who are just well-meaning. Okay, well, I don't want to be, you know, give them some granny. The coronavirus. It happens to be that the grannies and the grandfathers of our day are actually a bit hardier than our younger generation. So they enjoy hugging their grandchildren and seeing their daughters and hanging out with their family. And they're well aware of the risks they're taking. I think the older generation can take steps to protect themselves. They don't have to, you know, make themselves vulnerable, and the whole society doesn't have to shut itself down and have this ubiquitous draconian laws on everyone for the sake of groups that can look after themselves or should be, you know, separating themselves when necessary and just doing what they need to do. The government has not adjusted its estimate for the R, the reproduction number. This is all bullshit. Even the language, the whole thing, it's insulting, because that is updated every Friday. But officials are working on the assumption that it is now above one. Right, let's play Paul Weston here for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Paul Weston. And here is an interesting fact I discovered the other day. The total number of deaths from or with COVID-19 in England, amongst those aged under 60 and without one or more existing life-threatening illnesses, is pretty much zero, which paints a completely different picture to the tens of thousands of deaths propagated by our dishonest politicians and journalists. And before YouTube reaches for the Orwellian memory hole button, I'd like to point out, I'm not just voicing an opinion, I'm simply relaying the actual statistics from the NHS England website here, which lists total deaths from COVID up to September the 10th, 2020. I'll link to this site below the video so you can look for yourself. Scroll down the page to the link outlined in yellow titled COVID-19 Total Announced Deaths 10th of September 2020 weekly file and click on it. And this will open an Excel spreadsheet which looks like this, but when it's tidied up a bit, it looks like this. And as you can see, there are two columns for total deaths, one which lists those with pre-existing life-threatening illnesses in green, and the other in red, which lists COVID deaths without one or more pre-existing illnesses. And as you can see, the deaths under the age of 20 amount to 4, under the age of 40, just 35, and under the age of 60, just 268, which added together gives you 307. And this number is so low, it's statistically irrelevant when it comes to changing the entire economic and social course of the country. But even this minuscule figure has to be taken with a pinch of salt, considering the scandal around the cause of deaths label in this country. Anyone who tested positive for COVID-19 in March and died in a car crash in July was considered by our wonderful and honest medical profession and brilliantly talented investigative journalists at the BBC to have died from COVID. And the Daily Telegraph first reported on this dishonest insanity on the 17th of July in an article titled Public Health England's Exaggerated Death Statistics Are a Scandal That Has Fed Fear. And the article went on to state, it appears that Public Health England compiles out-of-hospital deaths by searching the NHS database for whenever that person ever tested positive. It then apparently fails to consider how long ago that person tested positive or their actual cause of death. It is astonishing. Under these terms, a person who tested positive a few months ago but then gets hit by a bus this week would be recorded as a COVID death. In fact, if left unchanged, every single one of the 292,500 people who tested positive will someday be a COVID-19 death statistic, even if they live for decades and die of completely unrelated causes. Health Secretary Matt Hancock has ordered an urgent review. End quote. Can you believe this? Health Secretary Hancock has ordered an urgent inquiry into something as ridiculous as a Defence Secretary ordering a urgent review into why soldiers mown down by an enemy machine gunner had their cause of death labelled as a touch of yellow fever rather than a high-velocity bullet. We have truly entered bizarro world here. And when this criminal dishonesty and stratospheric stupidity was put to Dr. Susan Hopkins, the Public Health England's incident director, she replied, although it may seem straightforward, there is no World Health Organization agreed method of counting deaths from COVID-19. In England, we count all those that have died who had a positive COVID-19 test at any point. Data are as complete as possible.
This is just absurd levels of corruption and insult to your intelligence. You know, this is how far we've fallen in terms of the moral fiber of previously trusted institutions. You know, this is unacceptable. I mean, it's so frustrating. You know, to listen to this sort of, it's just insulting, and it's intolerable, quite frankly. You know, are they going to do the same thing for flu this year or any other year? Well, we have a fully, you know, comprehensive, death rate for flu. You know, anybody who had flu, you know, 3-4 months ago, and they've died of cancer today, or they've died of, you know, in a road traffic accident or in a knifing incident, we'll put that down to flu. I mean, this is just insanity, and this is what is going on with this coronavirus nonsense. No one is going to do this when it comes to flu. Someone who dies of flu will be put down as a flu statistic. Unless, of course, they're exaggerating that. I think probably at times they have to get vaccines in and whatever. But, you know, nothing in comparison to this insanity of coronavirus and how they record so-called deaths from coronavirus, as Paul Weston here is discussing.
It's complete, Dr. Hopkins. It's complete and utter lunacy is what it is, not to mention completely dishonest propaganda. So it comes as no great surprise to discover that Dr. Susan Hopkins is involved in behavioural change at none other than Imperial College, home to the great thinker, truth-teller and mathematical visionary of the 21st century, Professor Neil Ferguson. And the fact that there was no designated cut-off point between testing positive at some point and dying from a skydiving accident in 2050 shame the government into action, and they reduce the cutoff point to 28 days after testing positive. But the original scandal still exists. If you're buried under an avalanche on day 26, or flattened by a meteor on day 27, the government will still, today, label your death as COVID-19. So as insanity and dishonesty are still the order of the day, I would suggest that of the 307 who purportedly died from COVID, not a single one did. And why should they? COVID doesn't kill healthy people of any age. If it did, people would be keeling over left, right and centre, given the hundreds of thousands of people infected with coronavirus. Even if you're very old, it doesn't kill you unless you're also very ill. The average age of COVID death in England is 81, and the average number of pre-existing life-threatening illnesses also involved is close to 3. Now, most of those who died were male, so the COVID figures include men who were already 2 years over their average lifespan of 79 and who were also suffering several existing fatal illnesses. And you really couldn't make this sort of insanity up. And it's the same everywhere in the world. In America, the Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, admit that taking out the very old, who are also very ill, reduces the death toll by 94%, and in Italy by a whopping 99%. So I say again, no healthy person in England under the age of 60 has died from COVID-19, and only just over 1,000 have died aged over 60 without pre-existing life-threatening illnesses. Yet here we are, months after lockdown, shuffling around in masks that barely work to counter a threat that barely exists, because we were told, and are still told, that the Great Plague stalks the land and we're all doomed. Now, this is criminally dishonest, according to the stats from NHS England, and criminally dishonest, according to the manner in which deaths are labelled by Public Health England. And what's so evil here, what's so dishonest, and what must surely be criminal, is the now known fact that tens of thousands of people really are dying because the NHS, clap for them, has effectively closed its doors to non-COVID patients, even whilst the hospitals remain empty and the staff idle. And when the whole COVID thing blew up in March this year, I predicted that unless there were gazillions of dead bodies littering the streets, the whole thing would blow over within weeks. Well, I was wrong about the whole thing blowing over, but that's only because this government, along with other governments around the world, have done the unthinkable and manufactured a massively exaggerated and false COVID death toll in order to keep us terrorized and compliant. Why are they doing this? Well, I mean, I've already hinted at the level of incompetence associated with our various governments is so off the scale, it has to be more than just well-intentioned stupidity, which is something I'll go into in my next video. In the meantime, please subscribe to my channel and activate the notification bell. And I say this because my subscriber numbers drop daily, which I would like to think is a result of YouTube shenanigans rather than subscribers removing themselves voluntarily. And also, it's likely that YouTube will pull this video because British government...
All right, folks, we'll leave it there. If you want to tune into Republic Broadcasting Network, I will be on there in about 5 minutes with Richard Carey and Graham Sutherland. So I will just say this quickly. You know, the audacity and the criminality and the lies are so off the chart with this that people are finally concluding there's more here going on than incompetence. People are finally starting to call it and think it conspiracy. Until next week, folks, I'll be back here same time. Take care and God bless.